or a non-greedy mind state is non-greedy, or a non-hateful mind state is non-hateful, or a non-deluded mind state is non-deluded. You're looking at kind of like the quality of the room, you know, the aura or the atmosphere of the mind state. And you're clearly comprehending it. If you have not done feelings, you won't be able to perceive mind states. You will mistake feelings for mind states. If you haven't done body, you won't be able to perceive feelings. You'll mistake body for feelings. You see how they actually do build one on the other? At this point, you can look at mind objects, having clearly identified, become clearly comprehending it, of mind state. Now you can look at mental objects, which is the fourth side of the first step. Mindfulness and clarity of comprehension of mental objects. And there's a whole series of exercises in that. And the first one is to be able to clearly understand and perceive whether one of the five mental hindrances is present. And this is one of Margaret and mine's big favorites. The first of these five mental hindrances, if I'm going too fast, please just tell me, is the desire for an experience other than that which is present. We were talking about this the other day, weren't we, Barbara? It's like about 98% of my life. How about you? Desire for an experience other than that which is present. To be clearly comprehending whether that hindrance, that mental object of the desire for an experience other than that which is present, is operating. Isn't that nice? You just clearly comprehend that's what's happening. Already there's faith in it. But you can't do that, you see. You cannot do that unless you've done the three previous steps. You don't have a hope in heaven, hell, or earth if you're just doing it. You don't. You cannot do it. You can't see what you actually like or dislike or whether you're happy or not until you know what your body is. You know, anesthetic is not the same thing as peace. They're two different things. Damn. Otherwise, we could all do Valium, couldn't we? Yeah. What is it they use now? They can use Prozac. Yeah. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. All kinds of people I know take Prozac. And it's very healthy that there's a wave of depression because we're suddenly realizing that a consumer society does not work. Yeah, that's all. And very healthy to have a state of depression. Why are we so afraid of depression? Why are we so afraid of the brakes? We only like the gas. But I would like to say, I totally agree with that, but I would like to say that without Americans, I would say we, because it stops me from identifying myself as outside of it. So it gives me more impetus to work with my own feelings rather than creating a self. And do you understand what I'm saying? So for myself, I would rather not say the Americans. I would say exactly what you said, but I would say we put sanctions. Because I can't separate myself from the world any more than I can allow you to be any different than me. Neither can I let myself be any different from anything. I can't do it. Because it's just the same reason why I have real problems believing a set of tenets that say that there is a, if you do everything right, you go to a wonderful state, and if you don't, you go to a not so wonderful, go to hell forever and ever. I have a real problem with that. I mean, as I said to my friend Kathy, I can have a real good time in heaven for quite a while, but at some point or other, I start wondering how those buggers were doing, you know. And that would just ruin it, and you know, starting to get the angels to take birthday cake dances or something, and then, you know, it'd be only a matter of time, you know. I have some kind of little escalator thing going on, or slide down, you know, some banister, and then get, you know, I have the problem of almost getting caught, and then, you know, all the politics. I mean, you know, as my beloved teacher Namgyal Rinpoche said to me, you're really a shit disturber, you know, and it's true, you know. That's exactly what I would be doing. You know, if there was heaven and it was separate, I can't say they, you know. It's my being too. We're all murdering to maintain our identity all the time. Even if you just murder ideas. So I try to be as clear as I can about that with myself. Okay, so we got another, we'll do another 5 minutes. So the five hindrances are essential desire. It's usually translated, but I really like to say it as the desire for an experience other than that which is present, which is just exactly, much more specifically, tells you exactly what sensuous desire is. It's like taking you out of the present moment, right? And the second one is ill will, anger, which usually comes up when you're reminded that it isn't present.
Why is it present? Careful!
And then the ill will usually totally exhausts you and then comes forth and forth. Great word, forth. Forth and forth. Yeah, exhaustion and a feeling like you just don't have the energy to try anymore. It's really at your best. There's no way. I'm just too tired to. Probably not going to. You go ahead with that. And then, you know, that doesn't work. And so then you get into, you finally can't sit there any longer. And you start feeling these little energies. And then pretty soon it's major restlessness and nitpicking. Okay? What's the next one? Restlessness and nitpicking. Grooming everything around you, that's what nitpicking is. There's another defilement. See, these are all the five defilements. They're pretty good, aren't they? Manny Sloth and Harry Sharper, they went to high school with me. On either side. Susie Nitpicker, you know, she was like my, I think we were Siamese twins for quite a while. They're all buddies of mine. And then the final one is where you go down to the corner bar and get drunk and say, yeah, I used to believe in meditation once. You know that one? Oh yeah, I used to have a guru. Oh, you meditate, do you? Yeah, I knew somebody who used to do that. You know that one? Oh, you're a vegetarian, oh yeah. I did that until I got sick. Except familiar plus skeptical does. Mm-hmm. It didn't work on my first try, so therefore I'm not going to believe it. Isn't that a good one? Oh yeah, it's a really good, yeah, it's a really good for the skeptical dose. It'll work for everybody else, but you know, there's just something wrong with me. That one usually accompanies to walk into orbit, didn't it? Often. I'm slightly ill, I'm slightly sick, I'm slightly tired, I'm slightly, you know, has all that kind of, you know, well, I just don't have the, you know. So you can identify all these, so that's what you do it, you see, with mindfulness and clarity of comprehension. When one of these mental objects arises, you just pin on it and you turn directly on it and you examine it and you see it is not self. You see it is arising due to conditions. You see it is not self and it just becomes. That's the first place. And precious human birth does this to a certain degree. That's why it's such a profound meditation practice. In the Tibetan tradition, they also have the five hindrances are listed slightly different order, and for some reason I've written them here, so I'll just whip them off to you. I'm sure you can be interested or not as you wish. First one is laziness, which is defined in the Vajrayana, Tibetan Vajrayana, as a sense of heaviness that prevents one's energy from becoming concentrated. An inability to have concentrated energy. Forgetfulness, which means not remembering the meditation practice, what we would call a wandering mind or dispersive mind in the Theravada practice. Forgetfulness. And sinking and scattering is the third one, alternating between dullness and agitation. And the next one would be non-correction of the hindrances, which would basically, they sound very similar to me, to the way Theravada way. Huh? The last one, non-correction of the hindrances. That to me sounds very like skepticism, like refusing to actually apply the teaching, even when you've heard it. And then either whether you're a Tibetan or a Theravadin, it doesn't really matter. You work basically the same way. Having been able to perceive the hindrance, having seen that it is not self, then you supply the antidote. The antidote is understanding that it is not self, that it's impermanent, this is subject to arising due to conditions. And then you go back to clear comprehension. And you then try to be aware of mental objects of the hindrance when a hindrance is likely to arise. So that first, your first exercise is to be aware with a mental object. When you're doing mindfulness of mind objects, be aware of when a mind object has already arisen. Then you get to the point where you can see where one will likely arise. So you avoid its arising. You understand? You can feel the potential of that arising and you just choose not to go there. Okay?
So you feel a state of coming.
Yeah. You choose not to go there. Now you can see how this way of working the four of the mental hindrances begins to take you into the four efforts, which is the second step. Okay? Remember the four efforts? That was when there is the possibility for an unwholesome mind state, don't go there. If an unwholesome mind state is present, drop it. If you see if you see a wholesome mind state, name it, develop it. If you see that no wholesome mind state is present, create the conditions for it to arise. Okay? That's the second step. And you can see how that builds directly on having some understanding of mind state. So having really clearly discerned that the five hindrances are not mind states you wish to develop, and teaching yourself not to allow them to develop, now the meditation on mind state turns to the five aggregates. Now you turn to the mental involvement with form, the mental involvement with feeling, the mental involvement with consciousness, with perception, the mental involvement with the propensities, and the mental involvement with consciousness. So before you were doing it more as how mind interacts with body, right? How the elements and mind work together. Now you're doing it from the mental side only. So before you're doing it from being aware of how it works as emotion, now you're being aware of how it is as a mental desire, going more refined. Is that clear?
Mm.
And that basically, is the fourth funding. And it's exactly 4:10, which is when I thought I would talk. So if you have any questions, can we keep them until tomorrow? Is that reasonable? And unless somebody has something pressing or they aren't coming tomorrow, is there any sense of that? And tomorrow we will look then, I think it might be interesting for you to look at how the Tibetans perform the same thing by using deity as the perception rather than by using insight, because this is basically looking and seeing what one is not. And in the Tibetan tradition what you do is you look and see something as radiant energy called deity. So you transform your senses into radiant energy rather than perceive the feeling of the senses. It's exactly the same thing, but just using it in a slightly different way. It's nice to know that, I think. I think it's very nice to know that, that the basic Buddha Dharma is the same, regardless of... You're always working with the people. These are the 37 requisites to awakening. There is no other teaching in Buddhism. That's the whole story. You just need to know how to read it. Did you hear what she said? No. Did you hear what she said? Hey, come on. It makes me happy. How many times have you done it? Two times. Isn't that sweet? I love it. I think that's really, that's very complimentary. Thank you. And every time she goes, well, the first time you didn't even know you did it. And I'm sitting there going, sorry, yeah, go ahead. I'll answer to anything.
Just call.
Well, you got the tape. I would prefer not to give these out because otherwise then that would be, I'm just so lazy. You know, I really want to write this properly. And this is not properly written. This is a mess. This is like a sketch. And, you know, I would like to write this in a way that it actually is useful to people. I just need some time. So, yeah. But I think it would be useful to have this so that there is a... Not only you're doing your practice, but you can also see where it fits and where, if you're having problems, where you might want to go back and do this part or... Mm-hmm. You know, it really is that simple. It really is very beautiful. Buddha Dharma is very beautiful in terms of its skillfulness. It doesn't have anything that any other spiritual practice has, but the skillfulness. I'm sure that Judaism, Christianity, Islam, all of those also have a remarkable skillfulness, but a lot of that was lost over time, you know, with this Reformation and that Reformation. You know, look at all the heaven realms we lost, you know, when the Protestants arose, and we lost all those, what do you call them? Purgatories. You know, the bosom of Abraham is like a line in a song. Most people don't know what it is. You know, rock my soul in the bosom of Abraham, you know? You know that? You ever heard that?
Yeah.
Did you know that's one of the purgatories? Where a soul rests to understand, to move to on toward heaven, right? So there are levels, there were all these different levels on where beings could live. You know, in pretty well all the teachings, but they're all gone from us, you know? Different mind states, if you call them, because that's exactly what they are. And we all exist in them all the time. But so I let, yeah, blah, blah, we know you like Buddhism, yes, definitely. Imagine you're surprised that I like it, eh? Any other quick questions, answers, comments, or concerns? Yeah, mindfulness, mind object, is mental phenomena. Put mental in front of phenomena. It's mind objects or mental phenomena, whichever way you want it. Translating these words is always a little iffy. I understand that the Buddha didn't speak English. No, I guess he just didn't have the right education, you know. Oh, well. Yeah, not proper schooling. You know, India, it's a third world country.
Yeah,
yeah. What's that? Yeah, it's not a primitive culture. Third world and all. Did well, regardless, you know. Not bad for one of them. Extremely beautiful gold light in your hand. Oh, that's all on tape too. That's perfect. I may have haunted me. Beautiful gold light in your hand. Spreads through your body. Pours out through your pores, spreads through your head, bone, right down through your arm bones and your leg bones, of course, if your eyes are closed, you know I'm gonna come up and bite you, so you haven't got your eyes closed. Pours out your skin in all directions, above, below, and right behind. You want to just image it going out, this beautiful gold light, wherever there is suffering in the entire universe due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind. It's just washed by this light from all of us, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered. By our coming together, we share it with all beings. So whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. And thank you for your great compassion. Thank you so much. Carol? Yeah, or to any one of the four other elements. There's a lot of fire air, right? And then you get here, when this part, you go up and down, and up and down, and up and down, there's many types of amoebas and, you know, slime consciousness, and you actually make it into animal, or, you know, you do mass murder a couple of times and fall back down until you eventually decide, yeah, I think altruism's a lot easier. I think next lifetime I'll go for altruism. I'm going to practice being kind for a change, yeah. And then you kind of get over the lip there, you see, and that's when the 10 marks are sealed. Where it's like a conscious effort, not an unconscious unhappy, but a conscious effort to feel the moments of aggravation and in the face of them turn into kindness. So it's actually a mix from just being satisfied, which in Buddhism would be called dhamma. Because all of us are going to be very satisfied to turn around. Aren't we? Nice. I was very dissatisfied when my mother died. I think, you know, I was very uncompassionate of her. Well, don't you agree? I mean, any of you have siblings? How many of you have siblings? So your mother had more children than you had mothers, right? So if she dies, more people suffer, right? I was telling her that. I explained it to her. I didn't get a blackboard. That was probably my problem. I was saying to her, you know, if you die before me, Mama, that means Anne and Larry and I, we're all going to have pain, whereas if you wait until we die, it's just you that's going to suffer. So it's more compassionate of you. I was very, you understand, it was like you're laughing because you see the joy of the clarity of it, aren't you? But she just, you know, yeah, I don't know. Mothers are very hard to discipline. Have you noticed that? They're very nervy, don't they? Do something like, just do what they're going to do anyway. How did I get off on that? I'm disciplined today. So you get to hear, I'm doing a review before we're really going to start the class. You get to hear, and so 10 marks of sila, that means you really have decided that it is worthwhile to practice sila. It is worthwhile, like that is so much part of the rebirth thinking karma that you're not going to break that rule unless some major shock causes other lifetimes of energy to manifest in life, unless you run into what's called a garuka karma. Yeah?
You mind
if I was trying to do that? Do I mind? I don't mind. Turn them on for just a short time and then we'll see. No, you can't. Say, there it is. It's been done. Thanks for asking. And then, of course, that might be very well and good to decide that you want to have some experience, you want to work with altruism, but that point of view can very easily be lost, very easily be damaged if there is a shock to your system. That suddenly all of your best intentions, any of you ever had that? You were doing one thing and then something interfered and you found yourself doing something that you really had no intention of doing. Everybody had that, if you're honest. And so when you make such a vow, when you actually do have the time, where you actually have the great good fortune to be a human being, able to practice altruism, do it. Because there is no guarantee. You're not safe. Damn. You're not. None of us are safe. You cannot depend on tomorrow being a good day to practice charity, to practice non-lying, non-stealing. Stop mugging old ladies, it's not helpful. So when you're gonna, if you don't, this is fine to accomplish any marks of sila, but then you have to actually decide that you want to, that is precious. That is a precious thing. And you want to do something with it. And what you're going to do with that, if you wish to climb the ladder of success, because up to here, up to this point here, this is success in both the world or in spiritual practice. These 4, 8, 12, 17, 22 points, the first 22 points. This is called the 37 requisites of enlightenment, and the first 22 21 plus 1, does that sound like any comment? Verse 21 are the activities that create success regardless of what you're doing. And they lay the foundation for the from here up to the top of this little cubey thing, which is the Eightfold Path up here, is all cause. From this little circle to the top of this cube is the causes for spiritual attainment. From the bottom of the Ninefold Throne base to this little seal of that is the causes for any kind of attainment, worldly. The Theravadins call this holy, and it's called this the unholy. No, this is the holy and this is the unholy, sorry. Well, in translation they call it that. It's slightly different than poly, it's not close to, you know, heaven and hell and poly, but it's close. And the first thing you have to focus on is actually seeing what the cause of your own perception is. Because you perceive without ever questioning why you perceive. Has any of you ever seen somebody, you thought you saw somebody on the street and they turned around and it wasn't them? So do you understand something about perception? Any of you ever fallen asleep and had a dream and woken up and not being quite sure where the dream ended and they... So are you so sure about perception? Do you understand perception? And you just sort of push that aside and don't pay attention to that. You've heard all those things about, you know, well, this is all a dream too, and there's days where that seems very true, but there are other days where it doesn't. And we don't think that our habitual way of seeing is the most profound dream we're caught in. Because when you operate through habit, you don't see things as they are. You see things as you remember them. An example, any of you ever been running upstairs and tripped, missed a stair, just for a moment, and that the mind just opens up, and just for a moment you're actually not sure what to do next? That's the difference between habit, running up the stair in your mind, and being present and asking a question, what is it? It isn't that you have to get rid of habit, it's that you have to choose when it's operating. Why would you want to have to learn how to crawl upstairs every time for the first time? Not a good idea. But how nice it would be able to be to, whenever you wish to actually just be present with total openness and willingness to see things as they are, with compassion. Wouldn't that be interesting? Would make life a lot more profound. It would be less like, you know, less like the old emotions are caught with the old views, aren't they? So every time you run upstairs, you're running upstairs all the way as you did every time you were a child running upstairs as well. Because somebody was chasing you, because you were chasing somebody. I mean, all of those emotions are also running up those stairs with you. So the first task in Buddhism is to be able to clearly perceive what is body, what is feeling, what are mind states, and what is the mind object in the world. Because most of the time, most of us don't have a clue what body is. We have a clue about what our image of body is. And we can have strong statements about what it is that isn't doing. And feeling the same, we're pretty profoundly impressive when we start talking about my feelings, aren't we? But we probably have not actually turned around and just looked directly at feeling and let go, kind of keep letting go of your view of feeling and trust yourself to actually be present with feeling. Unless it is feeling of such intense pain you don't have any choice. But you only can do that. Or an orgasm, that's one of your thoughts. Intense bliss. Has to be intense though, isn't it? What, none of you have ever had intense pain? Or bliss? And if you all have had any, you're all good. Over the age of 3, so. So that's what the first step is. For foundations of mindfulness. Awareness of mind state. that when you're present and there is a feeling of no space because you're obsessed with something you don't have is the most common reason why you get a feeling of no space. Any of you identify with that? And you can see how like that becomes all your walls and that. And so you lose perspective, so then you get very confused. You can't figure out what you want to do. Is that true? Can you all identify with that? So you see, that's a mind state. You could say, oh, this mind state is a crowded mind state, or a compressed mind state, or a small mind state, and you can practice making it bigger. See? And it's not changing anything, but giving you more space to see what is really important. That's what it's doing. So you're using the wonderful consort of space, which is one of the most profound ways to understand consciousness as spacious. So you can see whether the space of the mind is dark, is happy, is greedy, is non-greedy, is angry. You know, there's a quality to that, right? Space of the mind. The mind state, you know. Of course, if you're in Canada, you can't talk that way. You have to say the mind province. Here you could say state, can't you? The state, you could say. The state, you could say mind state. Mind objects, then. First ones you look at is typical in Buddhism are the ones that are unwholesome. You look at the five hindrances. You try to become aware of how often your mind is desiring something that is not present. Because that's like taking a piece of your skin and picking a hole in it and continuously picking a hole in it. Isn't it? It's like you applying pain to your own life, desiring an experience other than that which is present. Hey, yo, it's not present. The desire may be present, but the object isn't present. Appreciate the desire. Aspire for that desire to be fulfilled, not only for you, but for all beings, and then practice with what is present. Practice kindness with what is present. That way you're working with the desire, which is present. But you're not like becoming a hungry ghost, you know, becoming, you know, like totally pulled out of this life in some sense of grief and despair and unable to see what gifts you do have. Does that make sense to you? So that the five hindrances are basically, the second one is anger. Because you get angry with what else is keeps interfering with what you see as, you know, what you really want, don't you? If something interferes or something stands in the way, if you think, oh, I'm finally going to get what I really want, and somebody comes in front of you and picks it up and walks away, it's like, hey, it's mine, you dirty receipt! Here it is! There's like kind of anger or feeling angry at yourself for not being able to get what you want unless there's something wrong with you. Or is that how you do it? We all have our little tricks, don't we? But anger or anger at the circumstance is never possible. It's all just a, you know, never possible, can't be done, blah, blah, blah. Or your sense of anger. Very often self-directed by Westerners. We're not very forgiving of ourselves. We don't perform properly, we tend to jump up and down on our own heads, I think. And then, of course, you get tired after that, so then the next of the five hindrances is, I was talking about these yesterday, sloth and torpor. You don't have the energy to do it. It's a terrible thing, isn't it? And the next one that arises is, which you could chat, isn't it? Thought and torpor is Udacha Kukucha. Sounds like a Latin American dance, doesn't it? Bichikicha. Restlessness and nitpicking. Where the mind is saying, you can't tolerate the torpor, you know. Like, you can't tolerate it. It's just like energy. Your mind feels like acid leading into everything around. And finally, the consciousness just gives up totally and goes into skepticism, skeptical doubt, not question, just like really building a fort on saying that the whole thing is, it's all not possible, it's all a trick. Find that very often the people who have allowed themselves to be totally carried away with the power of devotion, and then the object of devotion develops a wart on their nose or something, and then there's this like rebound back into skepticism. Seen that yourself or others? Then out goes the bath water, out goes the baby. Very hard to move from that one. So what you're doing with the awareness of mind objects is you're first of all becoming aware of those and seeing them as not self, as impermanent, and as liable to cause dissatisfaction. You drop them as mind objects. So you cannot look at mind objects until you've been able to look at mind state. Can't really see mind states until you've been able to look at feelings. Cannot really understand what feelings are until you've been able to understand what is body. Cannot have the power to look at body unless you feel that you're basically a good person. You don't have power unless you feel good about yourself. These are not only the first four steps, these are the foundation of any spiritual practice. It is impossible, or any kind of success. This is now you're in the driver's seat, now you're in the car, and you've actually found out how to get the garage door to open, and you know how to work the gears, you know how to work the vehicle. This is like basic practice, now you know how to work the vehicle. Then you start applying how you're going to use it, where you're going to go, now you get driving skills. So, next is the four efforts. This is when you see the possibility of an unwholesome, avoid it. When the unwholesome is present, abandon it. When you see the wholesome is present, cultivate it. When you see that there is no wholesome present, feed it. Feed it. Create the cause from which it will grow. And then the next one are the four roads of power, which are, the first one is desire. Or, 10 desire, Chandra. Desire. And the next one is thought, so that there is this kind of feeling you want something. And then thoughts begin to form. A Lamborghini! Green! A green Lamborghini! That's what I want. Oh, no, I want a Rio. Yeah, I want a car. Okay. I don't want a Model T. No, I want a Pontiac. Oh, it's in a great state. I want a Volvo. It's like that thought that actually focuses the craving is the second. First is desire. Second one is thought. And the thought that I referred to there isn't just sort of scattered thought. It's It's the description of that kind of thought is the thought that rings the bell, that creates a sound that is actually distinct from all the other waves and ripples. I love that. That's such a beautiful way to describe it. And then the next thing is energy, that is to say, you can't be ambivalent. Your energy has to, you actually have to have your energy clear, so that's what you want. And then the last thing is investigation. You actually have to see who it is that's putting and where it's being put. Investigate both sides of your skin. Am I putting well? You know, is the motive for putting right now one, oh, this probably isn't going to work? Well, then it's, whoever that is that's putting is probably not going to work. And where is it being put? Is it, like respect in a certain way, investigation means your mind is clearly involved and you're caring, you're taking care of detail. Very much like one of my teachers once said, you should always see the place more beautiful than you found it. That's like investigation. This place. This place. To me, that has very much the quality of investigation. Like I'm always moving on from beauty to beauty whenever I'm doing that. And that's, for me, really what investigation means, that you're working with respect in another. So then the next part of the sutta is called the five moral faculties, because it's each one of the sides and the top of the four steps. And they are faith, concentration, mindfulness, energy, and wisdom. Wisdom is the balance of faith. Faith without wisdom is stupid. Wisdom without faith is dead in the water, and any energy. Concentration and energy balance each other. Concentration tends to just go right down, become one-pointed and dull. And energy lights things up, creates light. Mm-hmm. And mindfulness doesn't need anything to balance it. First one is faith. This is the way they're usually listed in the Theravada practice of time. Mm-hmm. And the next one is concentration, mindfulness, then energy, and then wisdom. I don't like the translations, but that's how they're usually translated. So faith and wisdom. It's like a balance almost with mindfulness in the center and concentration energy on this side of the cup, like faith and wisdom. So faith is balanced by wisdom and concentration is balanced by energy, but mindfulness is center point. It doesn't really need balance. So these are called the five roads of power. And that's the four sides of the top. And at first, they can, when it's in this phase of developing them, they can be overwhelmed, but their faculties, your learning, not the five roads of power, sorry, the five moral faculties. The one before is called the four roads of power. This is called the five moral faculties. They're faculties. And you're teaching yourself how to bring your consciousness to work with these, not to forget. So, because like, each of them in their own way are very addictive, like you can get very addicted to faith, can't you? Or you can get very addicted to wisdom, can't you? So faith is the ability to just let go of everything and not worry about safety, and it's like this great freedom rush, you know, this power of release. And wisdom is the great freedom of knowing exactly what everything is and having the name and being able to see it from and there's a great sense of clarity, you know, from the confusion. And in fact, every one of them, when you start getting into them, you really do need the opposite side to balance it. So it's learning how to identify those clearly in your psyche and work with them well. When you could do that well, they become this. This is the capstone for the four steps. This is called the five moral powers. This is these same five, but now they're unshakable. Now there's never any problem with the balance. Now if devotion is there, the wisdom does balance it. Now if wisdom is there, the devotion does balance it. Concentration is there, energy does, energy concentration is there. It's become like this capstone of sila, like that the morality is how you are going to act. You've trained yourself, that's the way you're going to be, so you don't have to think about it again. Now you're going to be mindful, and you're going to be using this, it's like again, the four, you know, the horizontal and the vertical, going to be using the four for the benefit of all beings. So then the consciousness is through the water area. This is earth. All of this is earth, this is water. And this dome where you see the figure, this is the development now of actual spiritual practice. So this is called the seven factors of enlightenment. Top of that is the Eightfold Path. It looks big. You know, the four corners are the eight corners to the Eightfold Path. Under that is this fire of umbrellas, and this is like, you know, the strong guy at the fair who hits the hammer and the bell goes up. So depending how well you've done all of this, then this is all causal to the cube, and the result is, this is like hitting the hammer down, and the result is how many umbrellas, how many of the 13 umbrellas of Asama Sambuddhasa you win. If you have already only done the four foundations of mindfulness and then taken the path right up the center to that, you will certainly get past the cube. You will get to an attainment. It would be either stream entry, seven-time returner, non-returner, or arahat. It would be like a four times of experience of transcendence without the bodhisattva vow, without a real desire for the benefit of all beings, without like really exploring all the possibilities of humanity, just for yourself. Okay, I'm going to do this because I can't stand this anymore. The experience of transcendence is not so hard to do. relative to Sama Sambuddhasa. When there is the experience one experience of transcendence, just one time, cutting through all illusion and seeing things as they are with compassion, means without insanity, without any kind of emotional upheaval where all the four emotions have become loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, which is what they become when the consciousness is using them properly, the four elements, arising in space for the benefit of all beings. That's what the five are. When that happens, and there is also just for a brief moment that, and just at the same time, a clear seeing things as they are, that's called stream entry. And you can attain that just by working with the first four steps. Just by working it again and again and again. And so that's why in the Theravadin, it says in the Satipatthana Sutta and in the Madhyama Nikaya, in the middle length things, and also in the long things where the discourse on longer discourse on Anapanasati or meditation on the in and out breath or meditation on the four foundations of mindfulness. That's why it says this way will directly lead you. This way of practicing the four foundations of mindfulness will directly lead you right above that cube. Will directly lead you to an experience of transcendence. There will be an experience of transcendence. You will no longer be subject to rebirth. There will still be a few things. There will be peace. There will not be the knowing, the pat, pat, when the word escapes me. Panya is a particular form of panya, which is knowing, that's applied to a transcendent mind. That when there will be an experience, there will be an experience here, but there won't be a seeing of cause and effect or the realm of compassion, which is why Theravadins are sometimes referred to as small vehicle, which is very derogatory, and I don't think you should do it. As you know, if somebody's in a hurry to get to the store, they're in a hurry to get to the store. It's not my job to say they have the right or wrong view, they should have gone faster, or I'm a better cut because I'm going slower in a limousine and I'm buying twice as much at a superstore. You know, it's all bullshit, really. It's on the tape. I'm going to say it twice? Okay. What do you want me to repeat? Want to sit closer? Okay. I'm saying that there is a lot of talk about, that I'm talking about the attainment, what you attain, because up to here is causal. Here is attainment. Up to here of attainment is, this is fire. This is the rain umbrella, which means that from here on there is no need to be guarded against any experience. And this is air, and this is space and light, right? So this is all resultant and levels of attainment. And what makes the difference of, you know, having climbed a stupa and gotten up to here, what makes the difference how many of these rings you get, or whether you have the power to be reborn any time as universal consciousness manifesting in a form for the benefit of all beings. You're still at doing that. And now, see, I have to use totally different words because I can't remember what I said. But, okay, yeah, I know, I'm trying to get there. What that depends on is how fully you have done the whole other work. Now, it is all you really need to get above the cube, to get into the resultant, are the four foundations of mindfulness, which is what I've been teaching this weekend. So it's a sort of wrap-up day for it. That's all you really need. That will give you what is called the experience of stream entry. By stream entry, three fetters of consciousness are totally destroyed. One of them is belief in rule and ritual. It's basically superstition. You are no longer superstitious. That doesn't mean you cannot use ritual, it means you're not superstitious. Another one is belief in a permanent self. There is no longer any sense of a permanent self. Okay? Very interesting, isn't it? So these rings, because I want to get to what you're asking me to do here. These rings in this is, so this is called in the Satipatthana Sutta, in both places that it appears, in the Theravada teaching, it appears in two places, and I quoted them so people can look them up, because I know you all have the Tipitaka at home and you just run home and check this on, and I'm very grateful that you do that, because otherwise I might not stay honest. So thank you for doing that. In the Majjhima Nikaya, which is the middle length thing, there's one writing of the sutta that talks about the four foundations of mindfulness, and the other one is in the Digha Nikaya, which is a long thing, where it's a longer extended teaching on this. The Buddha purportedly introduces this four foundations of mindfulness by saying, this is the one direct way to get above the cube. The one direct way to attain transcendence. This is because this space itself has the power to get you right beyond, is the cause that will create an experience of enlightenment, experience of sotapanna, of anagami, of stream entry, of seven-time return, one-time return, of no-time returner, and of arahat. This basic here. When it won't do, is do all the umbrellas, do all these rings, which are the, you know, I mean, do you care? The 13 powers of a Buddha, like the 10 powers and the 3 great wisdoms of a Buddha, blah, 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 of a Samasam Buddha. Blah. I mean, if you want, we can go there too, but I don't think you really want that now. No, I'm just talking to other people. I don't think you really want it now. If you want to, you know, you can go blah, 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 but it's not really, that's not valuable to you right now. The umbrella, which is the total protection of universal consciousness. You know, the high priestess in tarot cannot be made impure because there's nothing she's separate from. So it's a total protection, the umbrella here. It's just now universal consciousness. And then the ability, then the air, and then fire, air, space, and consciousness. The ability for mind to move through time and space and manifest vibration, any form, any time, any place, anywhere. That's what this part is, having that universal consciousness. So this represents the knowing aspect of a Buddha, the Samasambuddhasa. But this part, this four foundations of mindfulness, will just take you above the two if you just practice it. And so therefore, in our world, you get a lot of sectarianism and people saying, oh, well, this is a smaller, people who practice this, it's a smaller path, or this is the bigger path, this is, you know, we're the real Buddhas. So that, I'm really sectarian about sectarianism. It's just disgusting how I carry on about it. So I'm just sort of ranting about it. In my rant, I'm saying, you know, anybody who calls the Theravada a lesbian, that's really derogatory, and you shouldn't say that. And I was kind of my yeah, and I'm doing a sectarian rant about sectarianism, is what that was all about. And thank you for catching me on it. I was already embarrassed, now it's on the tape. Please! Oh, no, I see, you know, I'm just delighted. Thank you so much. Okay, so that's the review. Okay, so now, could you put it back? Thank you. So now we'll start the class. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Do you have any questions after Yeah.
Do you think anyone's put the 22 major arcana on that, around that?
I don't think so, no.
Do you think of the dance, especially with your understanding of the first
system? I mean, there will be parallels, whether it's a good idea to try to put them together. You know, I'm not sure. I mean, there will be parallels, and I think the parallels will be most obvious at the beginning, you know, for the ground of being. But then how you walk that ground, you know, it can be, I don't know, for me it's really, I find that the study of Buddhism itself is a lifetime.
And that's probably why nobody's done that.
Yeah,
no problem with that.
Because when I have, like for example, I love reading science and things like that, and when I'm reading like some scientist who is also religious and he's maybe Catholic and he starts talking about how Buddhism believes something, I think, this man is educated, he's got a beautiful mind, and he doesn't know pooey about Buddhism. And people make these great statements, and so, you know, generally speaking, if I was going to do that, I would be so weighted towards Buddhism, because that's been my main study. Although, you know, when I started meditating, and there were a lot of what one would call mystical experiences arose when I finally got out of the way and just allowed myself to explore meditation according to my teacher's instruction, as opposed to according to my instruction about my teacher's instruction. Always a good thing to do. A lot of results came in terms of tarot, and you know, a lot of visions that, because I'm a very body witness type meditator, be much more so. And so a lot of visions and experiences all, you know, all just like living tarot. So there is like a very strong love of Western mysticism and that practice in my being, but the theoretical clarity and the skillfulness of knowing how to apply antidotes to suffering of Buddha Dharma is, for me, just super I've heard of work with them. So I wouldn't trust myself to do such a thing, you know, because I would always be bending towards.
I just thought from what you've said that you may have had a look at that just because of the new morality and the cruel.
As in 21 and 22.
Yeah, the beginning and the end.
Absolutely, and it would be fun to play with that.
Some other time.
Let's do a holiday on some beach together with Buddhists and then Carol.
Sure.
That would be fun, wouldn't it? Wouldn't we have a good time?
Oh,
God. Just stay away. Be a bitch for having a good time. Wouldn't we just, oh, we would be so cocky, man. Wouldn't we? We'd be just like, oh yeah, we know. It would take lifetimes to bring us back down again. What earth? We would have a process. With enough paper and books, of course. I would want books.
Mm.
You would want books too, wouldn't you?
I think I'd need a few.
Oh, good, yeah. We're okay then. And Kathy will pack one. And bring them all. Any other questions? Yes.
I've started to understand the difference between
mental state is the room, like the bathroom. Mental logic is the toilet. Mental state is the room, like the kitchen. Mental logic is the stove. Inside. Mental state, cloudy. Mental object, sloth and torpor. Joy.
So they are quite...
Yeah. But so are feelings. Don't think for a moment. That's why I'm saying you have to actually have done it. So is body. You'd be surprised how many times somebody will come to me because their mental state of torpor is so great. And I say to them, you know, why don't you sit up straight? Oh God, that makes such a difference. You know, like they're all interlinked, which is why, like, can't understand one, go to the one before it. Really. Really do that. That's the rule. If you can't understand one, go to the one before it. That's the rule. Because probably you just don't have your feet placed right to see it. Probably you just need a little more better foundation and something else, and then more. This is all talking about what we actually are. This isn't how you have to, you know, cut yourself around to make yourself fit into a pattern.
If my husband
doesn't
fit, where does the practice of the inner
when you're interested in getting the top part of the stupa. And quite often people have experiences of Tummo or, you know, the fierce lady spontaneously, but they don't have the beginning of the stupa and they can't handle it, so they get very warped ideas about their transcendent abilities, and it can cause them grief. So in the Tibetan tradition, all of that, a part of the work of moving the consciousness through, because the Buddha was a Hindu, so, you know, undoubtedly he did all those meditations, and they're undoubtedly part of the practice that pretty well everybody did around him. But they've kind of become covert in Buddhism. They're still there. But you don't find them easily. And you don't find them easily because there's like, it is more important to do the bottom of the stupa. And you know, like, like I was going to receive teaching from His Holiness Shekhar Trinzing in Vancouver, and I was staying with a friend of mine. He had another friend staying who at the same time was doing tantric workshops on relationships.